This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Carabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here's your host, Aaron Harris.
And we're back with another episode of Rebels Reactions. Welcome back, everybody. We are here for a great episode. In the Name of the Rebellion. I tell you, what a phenomenal episode to follow up the season premiere. Just, I say this every week, you know, but just when you think you can't get any better, it gets better. And we are definitely in full steam into the fourth and final season of Rebels. And they did not miss a beat this week. Of course, with this episode, we did have our crew finally arriving at Yavin 4 after the occurrences on Mandalore, I should say. And once there, of course, they get sent out on a mission to hack the new Jalindi station listening post the Imperials had built, which had nearly wiped out Harris' squad while everybody else was on Mandalore. But unfortunately, that's when things go south for our heroes, because the Empire shows up and things go south. The station winds up being destroyed, and our crew actually gets separated. Sabine, Ezra, and a freshly painted yellow chopper. I still prefer the orange, but the yellow looked good. He wound up being rescued by Saw Gerrera. Of course, we got the return of Saw. And they wind up escaping with him and joining him on a mission to gets based on some data he had received, and they infiltrate an Imperial civilian cargo ship, which the Imperials were using as an undercover transport, because Saw is still on the hunt to find out why everything happened on Geonosis the way it did. If you remember from last season, we saw the completely lifeless Geonosis for the most part. Only looks like there was one survivor that we saw. And we wind up discovering that the Empire is working on some big secret, which we all know about. And, of course, Saul never gave up that mission. He's hunting for it. And we end up on this cargo vessel looking for it. And this is where we make some interesting discoveries. We find out the Empire has some prisoners on board who are there to help in some kind of construction project. They don't even know why they're there. They were kidnapped against their will, and they all wind up being some kind of energy mechanics or engineers to build large power systems. And they also, amongst their investigation, discover the largest kyber crystal that we've seen on screen, big or small. So huge green kyber crystal. Of course, that's where Saw, Ezra, and Sabine and Chopper decide to go separate ways. They have different ideas on how they need to go. Ezra and Sabine unfortunately don't realize that Saul does not have their back until it's a little too late, and they're both stunned. Ultimately, we see the crystal being rigged to the engines, which Saul winds up sabotaging to cause the kyber crystal to explode. Our heroes make their escape with the hostages and board an Imperial shuttle just in time to see the explosion take out the cargo ship, a Star Destroyer, and disable their shuttle before they're rescued by the Ghost. End episode. Whew, that was a lot. So, great episode. If you couldn't tell, that was a phenomenal episode, and we got a lot to talk about from this episode. And I figured, you know what? Let's bring in some good folks who know a lot about Star Wars and definitely are great people. I had the honor of meeting them both at Celebration Orlando. Yes, we have the host of the Sky Talkers podcast joining us today. We have Caitlin Plesher and Charlotte Arity. Ladies, how are you doing tonight?
Hello. So good.
Hi. Yeah, we're doing really great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, and I'm so happy you were able to join me for this episode to discuss this incredible, incredible story tonight. This was definitely one of the best so far. It's definitely right up there toward the top, and I got a feeling this whole season's going to progress that way. But let's just jump right into the conversation. We'll start with you, Charlotte. What were your initial thoughts after watching this two-part episode?
I completely loved this episode. I thought it was a fantastic mesh of everything good and everything that we've seen so far in canon without being super overt in references. I think that the tones and the thoughts that were kind of brought up in this episode were just really fantastic. And I don't know. I loved it so much. My initial reaction was this is definitely up there in my top five favorite Rebels episodes ever.
All right. Perfect. Definitely high praise for the episode. I do have to agree with you there. It definitely is one of the best episodes they've done. And it's right up there. I tell you, there are a handful of episodes I look at as staples for Rebels. And this is definitely going to be right in there in the mix because it connects so well. And we'll get into how it's connecting the stories and the movies going forward. Caitlin, though, what were your initial thoughts when you watched this episode?
I'm going to have to echo a lot of what has already been said so far, but I think you hit the nail on the head so well. It is a staple episode for Rebels, I think. It was just so well done, and the way it connects to Star Wars, not just A New Hope or Rogue One or Clone Wars, but to Star Wars and to all of Star Wars, I thought was just really incredible in this episode. And the questions it raised, the moral ambiguities that are so prevalent in wartime in the real world that we're starting to see so much more of in Star Wars, I think was great. And I think it also had a lot of light moments too, especially with Ezra and with Sabine and with Chopper. It had like the best of everything, I think.
It absolutely did. And it was, again, like you both said it so well. It was just such a phenomenal episode and explored so much of what we love about Star Wars. It connected so many pages between connecting Rebels into the saga and just explored just so much of the moral dilemma that our Rebels are in, and especially even the moral dilemmas between the Alliance and Saul and his Captain Rex. Oh my Lord. I just blanked on Captain Rex's name. Forgive me, okay. Dean, wherever you are. Captain Rex said it best, Saw's ragtag group. So a lot of to explore in this episode. But each of us have brought up the connections between how this flows into the saga overall. Let's just hit on a few of those things. I mean, because we see the crew arriving, of course, at Yavin 4 for the first time. Of course, the Rebel base that we see, of course, in the very first Star Wars and A New Hope back in 77. And, of course, rebuilt and reconstructed and used again in Rogue One, which was a great movie in and of itself as well. And it was great to see that base again. The only thing that was missing from that base, in my opinion, that would have made this just a little bit sweeter, were X-Wings. Did you notice there were no X-Wings around?
Yeah, what's up with that?
X-Wings are kind of like the creme de la creme of Star Wars ships, though. You gotta save them for, you know, like finales, I feel like. You know, they don't bring those out for anything.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. We know they're going to show up because we've seen were in the trailer. So we know they're coming at some point. But I was seriously, when I saw the show open and we saw that Mandalorian ship kind of rounding that the sun to get to the moon, and we see that and we know it's Yavin. And it's just one of those things. I was like, man, we're finally going to see the base. We're going to see everybody. Dodonna was there. We're going to see Mon Mothma. And we're going to get to see it. And we're going to get our X-Wings finally. And all we had were a bunch of Y-Wings, which Hera liked to crash, apparently. So it was good seeing Yavin there. Of course, the conference room. It was awesome to see that conference room. Of course, where in A New Hope, Leia and Aldana watched the Death Star battle and are listening to everything there from A New Hope. And, of course, we see them discussing with Jen her mission there in Rogue One. We get to see this this conference room again. And they did a nice job recreating it, too, via animation. Of all the connections we see in this movie, in this episode, it could have been a movie the way
I know it was felt done. Like a movie.
It really could have been.
Yeah.
What were your favorite moments connecting this episode and Rebel and as a result overall Rebels into the saga? We'll start with you, Kayla.
I really love Saw's character. This is something I've been thinking about a lot, is he's one of the few characters outside of kind of our main saga characters that we really see represented throughout a wide breadth of Star Wars canon. You know, he's in Clone Wars, he's in Rebel Rising, he's in Rebels, he's in Rogue One. We get to see him throughout a lot of different time periods and seeing him interact with a lot of different characters from those different time periods, like Ahsoka and Anakin and now Ezra and Jyn going forward and Mon Mothma from the original trilogy. I just think there's something really cool that he's had this timeline and this connection that really connects all these films. I know I really loved seeing it's kind of a small connection that isn't exactly blatant in the episode, but the engineers that they rescue on the cargo ship, how they talk about their home planets and how some of them were originally from Coruscant. I love Coruscant. I think it's such a cool planet. So I love any mention of Coruscant.
It really is. It's a great planet. I'm glad we finally got to see it, 'cause I remember reading about it in some of what's now the Legends series of books back in the day before the prequels came out, reading a lot about it. And it was fun seeing that planet on screen. And of course, now we're getting the reference back to it. But we get so much from this episode, because we even have at some point an Imperial officer referring to Director Krennic in this episode. Of course, Krennic is the character from Rogue One, which I'm going to assume everybody has seen Rogue One who's listening. If you're listening to a Star Wars podcast, I'm assuming you've seen all the movies. I would hope that would be a safe assumption. if you haven't, take some time to go watch it after you're done listening and enjoy it. Count how many times you see the ghost, because it's in there. Look for Chopper, because he's in there. So definitely worth your watch.
I concur.
Yes.
It is a good one. We also hear references to Jedha for the first time in this series, too. It refers to Jedha. What were your thoughts on all the connecting and all the bridging to the saga, Charlotte?
I mean, I don't want to repeat what Caitlin said, but I think Saw Gerrera is a really, really interesting character. And so seeing him again, and kind of just every time we see him, he brings up a different moral issue in some different way. But I think seeing the Kyber crystals were awesome, a great connection to Rogue One, and just, I guess, throughout canon as well, because we did see them in the Clone Wars and now in comics. And it was great because Ezra knew what that was. He knew it was a giant Kyber crystal, but like, we as fans come into it with like a really big background of what the Kyber crystal is and what it means. And I think that knowledge watching this episode was really rewarding.
I definitely agree. It definitely was rewarding to see how that happened. And I loved how the Kyber crystal almost called to Ezra. He kept hearing that, do you hear that music?
Yeah.
I loved how it called to him. So it really emphasized the connection between the crystal, the power in the crystal, and a Jedi at that point. Because he even mentions it was the same type of, it was calling to me just like my crystal that when I built my lightsaber. Mm-hmm. I mean, he recognized that call. So really emphasized the power between the two at that point. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. We also have not only throwback to the movies and to Rogue One and A New Hope, but we also have throwbacks to old Rebels episodes in here as well. We see as they're trapped on the dish and the Ezra and Sabine, excuse me, are trapped on the dish and they've thought they've hacked into the system and they actually accidentally just hacked into the communication network, and we have a ship, an Imperial ship show up and requesting the dock, and instead of Sabine tells Chopper to patch him through quick to the station commander so they don't suspect anything, and Ezra's like, I got this, and
he don't got it.
So he tells him that he's making, you know, you're not scheduled till tomorrow, this is a real inconvenience. And the commander of the ship's like, what do you mean it's inconvenient? Who are you? And Ezra, you know, off the cuff, I'm Brome Tidus. No, you're not. I am.
That was really funny.
It was perfect because you see Ezra at that point just drop his head and go, this always happens to us.
It was so funny. And Sabine, too, was like, oh, my gosh. It was so good.
And she uses it throughout the episode. It's her running from stormtroopers. She even calls him. Good job, Brome Tidus, as you're going through. But it was good to see him back. I mean, he started as an Imperial Admiral and apparently is now in charge of just a small freighter, or not freighter, but a small cruiser, and ultimately meets his demise the way his ship exploded after being so close to the station when it blew up.
True.
So, definitely interesting to see how that worked out. But another character that we see who has bridged the gaps of the prequels, the books, the original trilogy, Rogue One, and even the Clone Wars and Rebels, too, is Mon Mothma. Of course, being on Yavin, we see Mon Mothma there at the base, which is part of the planning of this mission. And it was good to see her, but we see a side of her in this episode that we hadn't seen before, because we see how she interacts with Saul when the droid that I guess he had some kind of hack with projected his message to everybody on the base, where he's basically talking down about the leader of the leadership of the Alliance, saying they're not willing to fight, they're not willing to make the big decisions, essentially, to win the war. And that their recent losses have proven that.
Yeah, that was so interesting. I loved that scene.
I did, too. It was very interesting to me, and probably one of the more complex dynamics that we see in this episode, as we see Mothma and Saw talk to each other. The conversation goes, we even have an officer ask Mon Mothma, do you want me to cut the feed? She's like, no, I want to talk to him. She wasn't going to back down. And she steps up, and even Saul, once he sees her, he shows her a sign of respect, but you could tell it's almost a sarcastic respect at this point. Oh, Senator. And it goes, and then they start going back and forth, and she gets really fired up and is just, I mean, calls him a criminal. And then what really got under her skin is when Saul goes, you know, I'm a criminal. He goes, the Empire considers us both criminals. At least I act like one. And that just really pushed her over the edge, and she got fired up and basically just said, if we act the way you act, I mean, this is a nutshell, this is summarizing. Basically, if we act the way you're acting, we're no better than the Empire itself. You're killing civilians. You're killing the innocent. That's not how things are done. We don't torture and kill our prisoners. It's not how it's not how we do things. And which made it a very fired up side, because even Saul, once she loses it and she goes off on him, he goes, there it is. there's the fire that we need in our leadership, and calls her out on it too. What were y'all's thoughts on overall on this encounter, and specifically how Mon Mothma reacted? Caitlin?
I really liked it. I think you can read so much into their history and relationship with one another through this scene. You know, Mon Mothma has talked about Saw before, both in Rebels and in Rogue One. And he hits a nerve with her, I think, that she doesn't like. And he's trying to undermine her and basically talk down to her and sway other Rebels to his version of the rebellion. And I think it's just all bubbled up in Mon Mothma to the point, to a breaking point, where she's like, what you said, this isn't how we do things, and this is not who we are, and I won't stand for that in my rebellion. And I loved it.
I thought that scene was really interesting because, like, the way, like, visually it's set up is Saw completely takes over, and in that moment his narrative and his everything that he stands for kind of takes over the base. And Mon Mothma, I think Caitlin's completely right. Like, something inside of her, he saw strikes a complete nerve in her. And I think that it's like completely visually represented too, because he takes over the entire screen and he makes her look so small and probably feel small as well, because what he's saying isn't necessarily wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was really interesting. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Caitlin, but
no,
had to.
Okay. Used to it. Yeah, I mean, what you talk about with the visuals is really cool, because you have this giant talking head of Saw, and Saw goes in guns blazing pretty much to everything he does, and he is met with a certain modicum of success. But Mon Mothma's approach is more of the, you know, walk softly and carry a big stick kind of approach. And even though visually it's Saw Gerrera who is bigger, in the end, I think the audience kind of naturally sides with Mon Mothma, and she is the bigger person, the one who takes the higher road and does things the right way, because, like she said, if you don't, you're no better than the Empire, and that's not who we are.
Exactly. And well said, both of you. I mean, that it's, you hit the nail on the head. It's not who they are. I mean, they have a very different ideology in how they react and how they act and how they are running their own little rebellions at that point. And it shows through that conversation. Even when it comes to Saw, even we see the almost the disdain for how Gerrera runs his operation from other characters. Mainly in this episode, I'm referring to the new, not Agent Callus, because he's not an agent anymore. He's just Callus, I guess. Assuming that's still his name. He wasn't a code name or something. But we see him in this episode in his new rebel garb, which was fun. But he even, the way he talks about Gerrera and how, because when they find out that the whole reason that their initial mission that we see Hera returning from was such a colossal failure was because of bad intel, is because of this new listening post. And we, Daldano is like, the rumors from Saul were correct. And Rex is like, I mean, how does his ragtag group get that such good intel? And we see the Callus step up and very distastefully. You can tell he's not pleased with those tactics, because probably he has used them before in the service of the Empire. Talking about how he does not hold back from getting his information at all. He'll use any tactic he can. And it definitely shows that difference in ideology between it. Because Mon Mothma, even talking to Saw, even says, as long as the doors are open for, as long as our contacts on Coruscant say there's open room for negotiation, we're going to pin our hopes on that. And Saul's like, no, we got to fight. This is not how we're going to win. We see those clashing ideologies right then and there. What in the whole ideological aspect of this, what are your thoughts when we start seeing the very detailed ideologies conflicting with each other there, Charlotte?
Well, I think it just brings up a lot of thoughts on my end, because it's, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with Saw or agree with the Rebellion in either of their tactics, but I think that the best part about this episode is that you can look at both of them and think they're both kind of, I don't know, they're both right in some respects. And it's just, it's really, that is to me the success of this episode, is that you can have these conversations where you talk about how there's no, is there a right way to fight a war? Is there, I don't know. I just think that it really, I hope that, you know, as a cartoon and as a children's show, I mean, technically, right, it can raise these really interesting moral questions that kids can bring into their life about right and wrong, I think. I don't know. Where I come down, I'm not sure. I think that's the episode, though, right? And
yeah,
like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the point of the episode, to show that you can't come down on one side, because even the start of the first part was Hera and the Rebellion had bad intel, and who had the good intel? It was Saw. And you don't agree with his methods, but he's getting things done. So at what point do you have to, at what point does the cause become more important than your morals?
Right.
That in order to uphold your morals, you have to abandon them for the cause. And I think that's something the Rebellion and Ezra is struggling with.
Have you read Rebel Rising?
I have not, not yet.
Okay, then I won't spoil it, but
you should read it.
Yeah, you should read it, because the certain questions that we're talking about right now are, Jin raises them in herself about Saw, and so there's an interesting parallel that's going on here, I think, with Ezra as well, to Jin in that moment when she spent all that time with Saw. And I think that those kind of thought processes that we have with a background of Saw are really valuable to understand his point of view and his character and what his past is like. I think, I mean, we do know a lot from him from the Clone Wars, and even what we've seen in Rebels and what we know from him in Rogue One. But I do recommend to anyone who hasn't read Rebel Rising and has passed on it, just out of not being that interested in Jin, I highly, highly recommend it.
Well, I will definitely take y'all's recommendations. it's actually on my list. I got a list of about 20 books I need to read, and it's on my list. It's, for me, it's been more about time. So
yeah. No, we totally get that. Like, there's so many that we haven't gotten to. It's bad. Like drowning in Star Wars books.
I thought when, you know, I was so excited, you know, well, let me phrase this before I get a bunch of hate mail. I wasn't excited that they pretty much canned the Legends. It was a little heartbreaking because there were a lot of good books there, but I was excited for all the new books that were going to come out. And I was initially, when I thought, like, oh, good, I could start from the beginning with what they're now saying is going to be canon, and I can read every single one as it comes out. I didn't think that's, they were going to blitz us like that, though.
And it's hard too, because a lot of them come out on the same day, and it's like, how do you prioritize? And then there's movies and TV shows and podcasts that have to be made. So it's just really tough.
And then that's just our Star Wars lives. And we have the rest of our everyday lives too, that just gets away from us. I mean, I was lucky when I did. I actually got two books read over the summer, which I was very happy with Thrawn and with Inferno Squad.
See, those are two that we both haven't read.
Yeah, we have not read.
I will tell you this. Read Thrawn, especially if you love Rebels, you need to read Thrawn, because not only does it give you good insight into Thrawn, but for me, it completely 100% changed my opinion of Arianda Price, Governor Price.
Oh, interesting.
Because you get a ton of background on Price and how her life is interwoven with Thrawn's. So it is, and how they know each other. You see, obviously they know each other in Rebels when she brings him in to help with her situation. But now we know how they know each other because of this book, and it gives me all her story about how she gets where she is, on top of how Thrawn gets where he is, and how their careers ran parallel. And it literally changed my opinion of that character. So I would definitely read that.
I gotta read that.
Yeah, it's good, very good. So definitely fun to read. But digging back into the ideology, no, you're fine. That's what I love about this show is we go off on a tangent here, we'll go off on a tangent there, but then we all come back to and still have fun. That's all it's totally about. I mean, if we can't have fun doing this, what's the point? So, and I have a lot of fun doing it. So, we're talking about ideologies between the rebellion, and Kanan and Ezra are having a conversation during this episode before they go out on their mission. Ezra is frustrated with the fact that they haven't helped Lothal yet. And we see, and I know you talked about and Charlotte made some good points about how you could see both sides of Saul's theory and Mon Mothma's theory on how to run the rebellion. Both have good points, both have good things. And we're seeing that thought process represented in Ezra, because he is wavering between the Mon Mothma way, the Saul way, throughout the whole episode. And we see that. And there's a statement that's mentioned in this episode that I thought was really good. And it was Kanan starts to say it, but of course Ezra finishes it, because obviously he's heard it 100 times. And it's not whether or not it's not whether or not we fight, it's how we choose to fight that matters. And that right there is directing straight to their ideology of how they're going to do things. Because they don't. It's one thing to fight a war. It's one thing to lead a rebellion. It's another thing to become your enemy to win the war. And I think the Alliance doesn't want that to happen. Where Saul's like, I'm going to win it at any cost. What were your thoughts on that interaction between Kanan and Ezra as they're discussing those ideologies, Caitlin?
Well, Kanan is probably my favorite member of the Ghost Crew, so I love any moments with him. But, you know, Charlotte and I have Charlotte has been binge-watched all of Rebels leading up to this premiere, and I've dabbled in season one again. I haven't quite made it through an entire rewatch, but just seeing the journey that Kanan has been on these past 4 seasons now, from where he started to where he is now, it's just incredible. But what I loved about this particular interaction and the quote that you mentioned is that Kanan doesn't give Ezra an answer. You know, he doesn't say it's how we choose to fight and this is how we should choose to fight. He doesn't lay it out for Ezra, which is very Jedi of him, right? He's going to make Ezra think about it. And Ezra has to grapple with the pros and cons and the consequences of how he chooses to fight, whether that is like Mon Mothma and the rebellion, or if he does choose to go down a more Saw Gerrera-esque route.
Definitely, I agree. And I think a lot of Kanan's interaction with Ezra in this, like you said, he didn't give him an answer one way or another how we should fight. It just says it's how we choose to fight that matters. He does tell him which way they should be fighting. I'm a dad, so I have kids. It's one thing for me to tell my kid, you know, don't do this. Another thing for me to tell her, don't do this because I tell you to. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they have to find out why. And they need to find out why on their own. It's one thing for me to tell them why. But then it's just, okay, well, he says I shouldn't do it because he said I shouldn't do it. And he says, it might hurt. He says, it'll hurt me. Well, how do I know it's going to hurt me? So then it's one of those, we need to, and of course, Ezra is a teen. He's a teenager. He's a young guy. He's at that age where he's going to find everything out on his own. He's going to have to learn it the hard way. And I think this was another prime example of that. In his dealing with Saul, because, you know, he's wanting to believe Saul. He's trusting Saul. He's probably one of the most trusting people in the show, honestly, when it comes around. I mean, he's best friends with a pirate.
he sees all sides.
Yeah.
And, like, in considers everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go
ahead.
Oh, sorry. What I think will be interesting is once we get back to Lothal, and if seeing the plight of his people on Lothal, if that will entice Ezra to take more chances and more risks in how he's choosing to fight, because it's something that is so near and dear to his heart.
Very true. This ideology, I got a feeling of how to fight is going to be explored through not just this episode, but through the upcoming episodes as well, as he does, as we know from the previews for the next episode, next two episodes that are coming out next week, that we're going to be back on Lothal. He's going to see firsthand what's going on to his home. And from the previews we see it's not pretty. It's not pretty at all. So it's going to revive some of those immediate emotions that Saul had planted into acting now. Who's going to save your people if you don't act? Type of mentality. So it'll be very interesting to see how it goes forward, exploring that ideology. So definitely lots of depth in that too. But we got to, it's one of those crazy things with Star Wars. They never, that every time, even though we're winding down to the end of a series, they keep bringing up things that's going to leave us talking about this for years
so
to
true.
Come.
Dave is a master.
Oh, he is. He's the best. Gotta be. I'll say it. He's the best there is. We are lucky to have him.
I completely agree. Like, he seriously is.
No argument from me. I'm the biggest Dave Filoni fan of them all.
He is definitely one of a kind. And I'll tell you, George Lucas knew what he was doing picking him to lead the Clone Wars. And, of course, to basically take a mantle of – and I mean, imagine sitting under the master – himself, just learning and taking in everything Star Wars.
No.
I cannot. I mean, Dave has created more Star Wars at this point than anyone else, even George Lucas.
Agreed.
That's crazy.
He certainly has. And he's done it well, too. There's not an episode of Rebels, there's not been an episode of Clone Wars that anybody would say, yep, George wouldn't have done that. That's a mistake. Everything was perfect, and has just flowed, and has been very attention grabbing, very mind boggling stories, which has just enticed people and generations, and will continue to entice people for generations to come. So a lot of great work from Dave Filoni. Can't say enough words.
Me neither.
If I ever get the chance, I got to shake the hand and be like, "You are awesome." So
that's Caitlin's dream.
It is. I want him on our show so badly.
I can understand that. I definitely can. He is. Just to pick that man's brain would be incredible.
Totally. So.
All right, but
what were we talking about? Rebels? Okay.
One of those tangents again, you know. So
the thing is about that line though that you mentioned that Kanan says that Ezra finishes, that's kind of become like the theme of Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. I I think that it's not just the theme of Star Wars Rebels, though. And like, this is kind of goes to like how Dave just completely gets it. Like, Star Wars has always been about like the choices you make and how important it is to like choose your own path and make sure that you choose, like, I don't know, the good path. And I think that that kind of proves that Dave like completely has the right mind about this, though, because it just kind of speaks to the larger Star Wars theme in every single story.
It truly does. And I'm glad you brought it up. And even the way you worded that just got me thinking, too, because the choices we make, I'm racking my brain now trying to remember it. The opening monologue
of Forces of Destiny. Yes. I was just thinking that, too, when you just said that.
Big and small shape us
into Forces of Destiny.
Yeah.
Yes. and that's what Star Wars is. Yes. That's what Star Wars is. We see everybody being shaped into forces to change the galaxy. The original trilogy, we saw Luke being shaped and molded. We see even Han and Leia being molded into their roles as time went on. Clone Wars, or the prequels in the Clone Wars, we see the molding of Anakin and Padme. Even Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi, we see how he grows and is molded. And in Rebels, I mean, this whole thing has been the growth of this crew and how they've molded into the rebellion. It's a recurring theme throughout Star Wars, and I'm glad you brought that up. That was definitely a huge point. And definitely we've been hitting around that, but that was a statement that needed to be said, because it is a running theme. It is a running theme throughout Star Wars.
And like it, even just thinking about it now, like, I think it's kind of a little telling to see like where this show is going to end. And I think it obviously all has to do with what final choice that we're going to see these characters make.
Final choice.
Postpone the choice, please.
Yes.
Postpone it.
Four more seasons.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I would love it. it's one of those things we're gonna keep seeing. I mean, we saw somebody else make a choice in this episode too that's going to influence going forward. It's Sabine. Sabine is, of course, at the end of the last episode, she's fighting on Mandalore with her family. She passes the Darksaber to Bo-Katan. And, you know, personally, at the end of that episode, I did not think she'd be leaving Mandalore this soon. But apparently she left right afterwards, because she's on board the Mandalorian ship with Kanan and Ezra and Chopper. And Hera is shocked to see her when they get back. And she's like, you're Sabine, you're back. What about your family? And Sabine really has grown in this episode. Not in this episode, but throughout this series, and we see that a lot in this season so far. But Sabine looks at her and she's like, you know, my family's fine. I need to be here for my family here. My family there is fine. And we see that this crew has grown from a bunch of just troublemakers, and bringing Ezra in the mix, they've grown even to a closer family at that point. What do you think about the choices that Sabine has made coming back to Yavin with the crew rather than staying on Mandalore? Charlotte?
I think it was always going to happen. I mean, maybe I... Do I think that? I don't know. I think that she... It kind of reinforces that this ghost crew, that this like this found family type situation is very real. And it's just kind of, I don't know. It really tugged at my heart that she came back so fast, you know? And I think clearly there is a lot at stake for the ghost crew right now. And she recognizes that.
Yeah, I think part of it is that it was kind of the functionality of this story, because it's the last season. We don't want Sabine on Mandalore and everyone else, like the Ghost Crew doing what they're doing. You know, you want Sabine with the Ghost Crew. So I think from a story aspect, it kind of had to happen that way, just given the time crunch of the last season. That being said, from within the galaxy, I think what you said, Charlotte, was exactly right. This idea of found family is just as important as your blood family. And I think also Sabine knows that part of what they're about to go do is go save Lothal, to go help Lothal. And she knows how important that is to Ezra. And Ezra is a part of her family, and he needs her just like she needed him on Mandalore. And so, you know, we saw the Ghost Crew show up for her on Mandalore, and now she's showing up for them.
Very good. Very good. Do you think it's too soon, though, for her to leave Mandalore to come back with the crew, though?
I think yes, but again, I want as many episodes with Sabine as we can have, so I'm okay with it. I think it was probably too soon. Just like I thought in last season that she came back too soon in the last season as well, after she had left for Mandalore. But particularly for season four, I think I would be more upset at missing Sabine than her being on Mandalore.
Okay. I can understand that. Sabine is definitely one of my favorites, so I can agree with those statements of wanting her there. But with the chaos in going on Mandalore, I just kind of expected, I expected her to come back, of course. I just honestly did not expect her this soon. So,
yeah, I think they like tied that bow for us at the very end, of the last episode where she gave the Darksaber to Bo-Katan. Wow, I did not mean to make a funny bow pun, but there we are.
and gosh.
I think that, like, you're supposed to feel this kind of satisfaction that, like, she made the right choice at the end of that episode. Whether or not we actually feel it is kind of, you know, per person specific, but I think that was the purpose of that kind of being all wrapped in a bow at the end.
Oh, you're still going.
Yeah, you know, I can't stop.
Yeah. I think it would be different if we were going back to Mandalore.
We don't
know that we're not. But the like you said, the way they kind of leave it at the end of the Mandalore episodes is I feel like we'll see the Mandalorians again. I don't know if we'll like go back to Mandalore and spend a lot of time there again this season. So I think that might have something to do with it too, that it might be harder to explain why Sabine was leaving Mandalore if we didn't have a whole other episode devoted to it, perhaps.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, I agree. I agree. I mean, I'm glad Sabine's back. I really am. Definitely one of my favorites from the show. Everybody knows who my favorite is. I've broadcasted that very clearly. I at least I hope I have. But Sabine's definitely one of my favorites, and we definitely go through. The story would be incomplete without her, especially running up to the final season. But I, back of my mind, it's still got that thought. You know, kind of early to leave Mandalore after doing everything you've just done, especially after having that whole speech where it's time to prove to your people where your loyalties lie. Okay, I'm going to go back and help these people on Yavin. So,
yeah, no, I definitely see that point. Yeah.
So definitely, but it's good to have her back. It's good to have her back. Now, one thing I do want to mention that I was not in my show notes, but I need to go ahead and bring it up because once I got the episode playing right here next to me on my iPad. So I glance over and just catch little glimpses of things. But one thing that I just caught a glimpse of, and I'm glad I did because it's something that actually bothered me from this episode. I absolutely love the episode. Bar none, one of the best ones made. But there was one thing in this episode that I did have a qualm with that I've kind of been wrestling with was the Death Troopers. I liked seeing the Death Troopers. I really did. They're they're very intriguing characters in, from Rogue One. They had that coded voice and everything. You could never understand what they're saying. And they were, they could be beat, but they were extremely hard to beat. They inflicted a ton of damage on whoever they fought. They were the elite of the elite, essentially is what they were. And here we are on this cargo ship. We have Death Troopers guarding this extra large kyber crystal. And we have Ezra and Saw taking them out like they're stormtroopers. And I have, and not to mention the fact that they're communicating, and you have that same scrambledness in their voice, but you can actually hear the words that are being said at this point. You can understand, which you couldn't understand them at all during Rogue One. But you're understanding them clear as day now. And I had a little bit of a problem with that. Did that strike anybody else off balance there?
It did. It struck me off balance that you could understand them, but I was really glad that we got the female Death Trooper. Personally, I was really pumped about that, but because it was like super subtle. But at the same time, I completely get it. Like the and I think that's why they unscrambled the voice, is like my purpose for bringing that up, is so that we could be like, oh my gosh, a female Death Trooper. But the thing is that I completely get it, because like there's something about that first scene in Rogue One where you're like, whoa, what are these new stormtrooper things saying? Yeah. You know, and it's like so foreign, so alien, that like it's very off-putting and scary. And that element was definitely missing in this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were larger. I have to agree. Oh, yeah. They were larger in life during Rogue One. I mean, they were, they stood head and shoulders above everybody else, and for a good reason too. I loved it, and you brought up the fact that it was a female Death Trooper, which is awesome. So I'm glad they did unscramble the voice. So you realize who the voice of that Death Trooper was, right?
No, who was it?
That was Jennifer Hale, who voiced Ayla Secura during the Clone Wars.
Oh. That's cool. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was Jennifer Hale. She got brought back for this episode and lended her voice talents to the Death Trooper, which was awesome to have that connection. Yep. So that was fun. But yeah, especially to have the entire squad go down and her be the only survivor. I don't know. As large as life as the Death Troopers were in Rogue One, and we saw them die in Rogue One. There at the end, they were dropping like flies. They weren't dropping like flies like the Stormtroopers were, but they were being killed. They were dying. But it did bother me a little bit in the sense of the things that we had these larger than life characters that are reduced to almost little more than a stormtrooper status at that point, the way they were taken out. And that just bothered me. I don't know why. It just did.
It takes away a little bit from Rogue One almost. Because they are a little bit more, you know this story in Rebels of them, and it's not how they're portrayed in Rogue One.
Correct. It's not. It's definitely made I wouldn't say change my opinion on them, but definitely made me think as to why they could have done that or why they would have. But hopefully, you know, we're not done with them yet. We know Thrawn's going to be back in the future. You know, he's our arch nemesis for the season. So we are going to see him, because we know he has them as bodyguards. So we'll see how that works out, how they come back. So definitely In the Name of the Rebellion was a phenomenal episode, and definitely there's a lot that we discussed that we hit on, and definitely and I'm sure this is going to be one of those things that I will watch again and again and again and be like, man, we could have talked about this.
I know,
you always find something new in these episodes.
I honestly feel like that I'm going to come back to this episode a lot, just like and discover something new every time. I think.
Yeah. And what you said earlier, Aaron, it is a staple of Rebels, I think. I think that's so true. And it's something, like you guys have said, that we'll be returning to a lot. It'll be essential viewing for Star Wars fans.
Oh, it will have to be. Absolutely. If, matter of fact, I'm even going to go as far as say if you're going through a movie marathon, this would be a nice episode to just kind of slide in there between Revenge of the Sith and Rogue One.
I've been trying to think of like different ways to slip in what Rebels episodes to watch to lead up to Rogue One and A New Hope and that sort of marathon. And you're totally right. This would be a good one to add to that.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely insert this one. I would definitely insert the one, too, where the episode of Secret Cargo, they first see Mon Mothma and she makes that broadcasted speech and brings the rebellion together. And you start seeing the ships fall out of hyperspace. That would be a good one to put in there too, because we're seeing from that moment on, we're seeing the birth of the Alliance. So definitely those would be good to put in there for sure. For sure.
Totally. Yeah.
So definitely In the Name of the Rebellion, one of the best. Let's go into final thoughts and go ahead and start wrapping things up. Charlotte, we'll start with you. What are your final thoughts on In the Name of the Rebellion?
Well, I loved this episode and I loved the moral questions that it raised. And I think that in terms of where this episode fits in the Rebels series, and it just really means good things for season 4. And I'm so excited to see what sort of questions are continued to be raised throughout the rest of the season. And we'll be still thinking about once the season is over. It was great. I loved this episode.
Excellent. Caitlin, how about you?
I have to agree with everything Charlotte said. But yeah, I think this episode will be one we rewatch for years to come. And I love this setup. It like the springboard it serves for our characters for the rest of this series and this season, especially with Ezra. He is grappling with a lot of questions right now, and we're going to see that come up a lot throughout the rest of this season. And I'm excited to see what his conclusions are.
Agreed. It's a lot of exciting things are going to happen in these last few episodes, and we got a lot to explore, a lot to see what's going to happen. I got a feeling we're going to wind up with a lot of questions answered, and I got a feeling we're going to be left with a lot of questions to answer. Unanswered, yeah. Yeah, I was figuring out the best way to say that, and it wasn't coming out.
Dave's style is unanswered questions, and I think we'll have plenty of those.
He knows that it's ending, so unlike with Clone Wars, I think it'll be a little bit more definitive, but I think there'll still be some open-ended questions that, you know, could be revisited in the future.
Oh, they'll have to be. There always is. We'll be probably buying shirts saying Ezra lives? Question mark.
Oh my god!
let's not even go there.
it's going to be one of these mysteries going forward. There's going to be something they leave unanswered. By the end of this, that's going to drive us crazy. But that's the way it is. And this episode was just phenomenal. I mean, the bridging of the gap between other episodes, Rebels, between A New Hope, between Rogue One, between the Clone Wars, because of Saul, we see a lot of growth in this episode for the Reliance. We see the moral dilemmas between Saul and his partisans, and of course the Alliance to restore the Republic, as Saul called it. By its official name. So it's definitely a lot to wrap your head around. And the fact that are presenting such moral quandaries in a kid's show, when it's supposed to be a kid's show, is just a tribute to, and make it understandable, is just a tribute to not only the writing, the producing, the acting, everything, it just plays into that. And my hats off to them. It's just phenomenal. Well done. Grading this episode, we grade every episode on that school scale that you all grew up with, the ABC, unless you're under the age of 18 now and you're doing the progressive scoring stuff that they're doing now that my daughter's dealing with. But
oh, ABC,
I know, it drives me nuts. But the ABC and D F scale of scoring this of the scoring the episode is what we're going to do now. In the name of the rebellion definitely is a strong A for me. It's one of the whenever I grade an episode, the measuring stick for me has always been Twilight of the Apprentice. When we got the big Ahsoka Vader fight, it's just in that whole. That was just so perfectly done. That's always been my standard of measure for Rebels at that point. Once that episode aired, I was just that was the standard. That's the standard bearer for me. And so I've yet to see an episode that has surpassed it.
Yeah.
But there are episodes that come close. This definitely is in the ballpark. Definitely an A scored episode. Caitlin, how about you?
Oh, I gotta go with an A. Absolutely. Easy grade.
It's an easy A.
It's an easy A. They earned it.
I liked easy A's in school. They were wonderful. how about you, Charlotte?
Can I do A+/A? In college, I got a lot of slash grades. Yeah. So I think I'd have to say, because a slash grade really is just the lower one. So I think it's going to be an A, really, okay, for me. But like almost at an A plus and could like sustain an A plus rating in years to come.
Okay. Very good. I'll take it. We'll take it and run with it.
A nuanced answer.
That's a new one, but I'll take it. We'll run with it. Awesome episode. Awesome. And I'm so glad both of you were able to join us this week to review this episode. This is
so fun.
It was so great. Thank you so much for having us.
No, yes. My pleasure. I'm glad you were able to make it. If people want to talk Star Wars with you, because I know y'all are Star Wars fans, both of you are huge Star Wars fans, or even hit up your podcast, Sky Talkers, how would people go about doing that? Charlotte?
Well, Charlotte, you go.
Or either okay. or. Either or.
So to talk to us individually on we're always on Twitter. You can tweet at us at Crarity, which is C-R-E-R-R-I-T-Y. That's me. And Caitlin is at Caitlin Plesher with a C. But our podcast is Sky Talkers, and that's on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at Sky Talkers Pod. And our website is skytalkers.com. So, yeah.
Perfect. That's where you can find us. And we've been going through all of the Star Wars movies individually on our show. And this Saturday is actually our last episode where we cover The Force Awakens. So you guys should be sure to go check that out. We had a lot of fun.
Not our last like official episode.
Oh, yeah, no, always. Sorry. The last in the Star Wars saga review series that we've been doing for the past couple months. So we made it to the last Star Wars movie, but not the last Sky Talkers episode by any means.
I was going to say, I thought my show was the only one that had a death sentence right now.
Oh, no.
I was talking to Dan about that earlier today. I'm like, hey, yeah, we're walking the green mile right now, so we'll be fine. So sad. No, it's all good. You know, all good things must come to an end, but we're not done yet. We still got several more weeks of episodes. We got three more weeks before the holiday break, before they take the break till after New Year's. But so we got a couple more episodes coming at you this year before we wrap everything up next year. So be on the lookout for that. I want to know what everybody else thinks about In the Name of the Rebellion. So don't hesitate. Drop us an email at RebelsReactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. If you just want to talk to me outside of Rebels Reactions or talk other parts of Star Wars not related to Rebels, I'm game for that too. Hit me up on Twitter at TAHarris121079 or just shoot me an email at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. I almost gave him my work email, and that would have been really bad. my boss would not have been happy. But yeah, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com is the best one to hit me at. And let us know what you think. Give us your thoughts on In the Name of the Rebellion. And as the new episodes air, send us your thoughts as well. Any emails you send definitely could be used on air if we do get them in time. So definitely send them in. Charlotte, Caitlin, it was a pleasure meeting y'all at Celebration. It was even more of a pleasure having y'all on to discuss this episode. Thank you so much. I do greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
It definitely was. And hopefully our paths will cross again in the future. And definitely
2019.
There we
you'll
go.
You'll see us. Wherever it is, you'll see us there.
Absolutely. We are going to make that happen. So thank you all so much for joining us tonight. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. Thank you for listening to Rebels Reactions. Thank you for making the show the success that it is. I do appreciate it. And remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.